Hi there, everyone. Aaron here. In this lesson, I'm going to talk about some of the words and phrases that Dan and I used in our conversation about change. And the first is turning over a new leaf. I asked Dan, "You've been turning over any new leaves in your life recently?" Where does this come from? Well, imagine the image of seeing a fallen leaf on the ground, and when you turn it over, there's a potential for something new and interesting to be underneath. Maybe it's a pebble, maybe it's an acorn, maybe it's an insect, but there's that chance that you're going to discover something new. But actually, this idiom comes from not leaves on the ground, but actually leaves of a book. Long ago, pages were called leaves, probably because of some of the materials they were made from. But if you were to turn over a page in a book that you're reading, guess what? There's going to be something new and interesting on the next page in the story. So this is where it really comes from. So to turn over a new leaf, figuratively, means to start something new, to move in a new direction in life. Often it's moving from negative to positive, but it doesn't always have to be used that way. It can be used in a very neutral way, just meaning a big change in your life, turning over a new leaf. So in the case of Sean Hopwood, he found himself in prison after bank robberies, and he decided to turn over a new leaf by becoming an expert in law and then help himself and help other prisoners along the way. And so he turned over a new leaf. He moved from negative to positive in a very big way. Let me give you another example. I used to live in San Francisco, in California, as a young man, and life was okay there. I was enjoying it, but I wanted something new. I wanted a new challenge, and so I moved to Asia. I made the decision to move to Asia. And that's what I did. And it changed my life completely, right? I turned over a new leaf by moving from one country to a completely different part of the world. And, you know, that's not moving from negative to positive. It's a neutral change, but it's a big change. It changed my life completely. So that's how we use this idiom, turning over a new leaf. Have you turned over any new leaves in your life? All right, let's move on. The next is set in stone. What does that mean, set in stone? We're talking about changes, and Dan says physical changes are easy, but things like personal growth, inner growth, your personality, those are kind of set in stone. So when something is set in stone, it simply means it's difficult or impossible to change. Imagine writing a sentence on a chalkboard. If you want to make changes in that sentence, it's really easy to do. All you need to do is erase part of the sentence and write that sentence again or change aspects of the sentence. It's easy. That's why teachers use chalkboards. Now, if you carved the sentence into stone, like a gravestone, for instance, that is very difficult to change, if not impossible. So that's where this comes from. When you carve something in stone, you can't change it. It's done. So how would we use this? Well, we often use it when we're talking about plans, setting dates, setting times for meetings or events. When a date is not fixed yet, it's not set in stone. You can change it easily. But when you set the date and you announce the date for a meeting or an event, it becomes more difficult to change. It still might not be set in stone, but it's more difficult to change. Now, if you're planning a wedding, something very important and expensive, when you set that wedding date and you announce that date, it becomes set in stone. You just cannot change it. People are making hotel reservations. They may have purchased plane tickets. You can't so easily change a wedding date. That becomes set in stone. So if someone asks you to change it, you can say, sorry, it's set in stone. All right. Right after Dan says set in stone, he says, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And that's a very, very common, very famous idiom in English that essentially means the older you get as a person, the more difficult it is to change things in your life, like habits or beliefs or ways of doing things. I like the analogy of a young tree. When the tree is a sapling, when it's just starting to grow, it's very flexible. You can bend it almost all the way to the ground and it won't break. So it's easy to change. You can change as a young person quite easily because you're growing and you're young and you're open to many things. But when that tree grows old, it becomes stiff and brittle. And if you try to bend it, it may break. It may very well break. And so, yeah, that's kind of what this idiom refers to. The older we get set in our ways. Our habits become set in stone. And so it becomes hard to learn new things or to change your thinking or to turn over a new leaf and start something new. It's difficult, right? So Dan says, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? I don't believe it. I think you can. The next is down and out. What does that mean? Well, we're talking about change, and I mentioned that there are some really good examples of people in down and out places that end up making the best of it, like Professor Hopwood. And so down and out generally refers to a person with no place to live, no job, no money, and they're not feeling good about it. They're not in a good space in their life. Life has its ups and downs, but some of the downs that people experience are very, very low. And when you're in that space, you are down and out. So yeah, that's what down and out means. Do you know anyone who's ever been down and out? Were you able to help them? Have you ever been down and out? I have been fortunate enough in my life never to have been down and out, but it could happen. It could happen. It could happen to anyone. All right, moving on. The next is hardcore. Hardcore. Dan says, if you do something violent in society, you can get sent to a hardcore prison, a more hardcore prison. What does that mean exactly? Well, this adjective generally means extreme, intense. And in addition to extreme and intense, it has like sort of aggressive, violent connotations. So for example, we would say hardcore violence, right? And that's really intense violence with lots of blood and guts. Hardcore pornography, which would be very explicit and also aggressive. Hardcore music is very aggressive music that you might see people, you know, smashing into each other and thrashing around and when they're dancing to it. So that's how we would use hardcore as an adjective. You wouldn't say, oh, he is such a kind and compassionate man. He is extremely kind. He's hardcore kind. No, you don't have hardcore kindness. We don't say hardcore kindness or hardcore love or hardcore compassion. We don't use this adjective that way. We only use it with aggressive connotations. But having said that, hardcore also can mean, it has a different meaning. It can also mean very committed to something, very dedicated to something. For example, let's imagine that you're a member of a hiking group, and it's a fairly big hiking group. There are, you know, 20, 30 people in it. And on the weekends, once a month, you choose a location in the mountains and you go hiking all day together. And it's fun. You meet people, you get to talk with them. But when the weather's bad, fewer people go on these trips. And maybe you'll only get 10 people going when the weather's not so good instead of 20 or 30. But there in your hiking group, there are three hardcore members. And what that means is they will go hiking no matter what, even if it's a hurricane or some kind of downpour with freezing cold weather. Nothing fazes them. They are so dedicated to going hiking. They are hardcore members. Music groups have many, many fans, especially if they're successful, but some of those fans are hardcore fans. They buy every album and they buy all the clothes of the band, and they don't wait for the band to come to their city. They will travel with the band and they will attend all of the concerts. They're hardcore fans. Okay, so that's how we use it, hardcore. All right, moving on. In Cold Blood, we're talking about this crazy person from, I think it was Norway or some Scandinavian country, who murdered dozens of people in cold blood. So what does that mean, in cold blood? Well, in cold blood simply means without any emotion or feeling. And also, it means in a cruel and calculated, very deliberate way, not in a passionate way. So it's usually almost always, actually, it's almost always used to speak about violent actions with cruel intent in a very deliberate way. So, for example, let's imagine that there's these two guys and they get drunk and they start an argument with each other and the argument escalates and one guy picks up a stick and he hits the other guy over the head. And he hits him so hard that the guy ends up dying, 24 hours later. So he murdered the other guy. But he didn't do it in cold blood, okay? He was very passionate. He was in the heat of passion because of this argument and this fight. And he didn't calculate killing the guy. He didn't mean to kill the guy. He just hit him with a stick. Of course, what he did was terrible, but it wasn't in cold blood. Now, if he had planned to kill the guy and he set it up in a way that he had thought about it, he knew exactly what he was going to do, and he calmly walked up and smashed the guy over the head with a stick, then yes, he killed him in cold blood. That's the difference, okay? So it just means without any emotion, with a cruel and calculated intent. So you can attack someone in cold blood. You can kill someone in cold blood. You can hurt someone or maim them or, you know, cause great injury to them in cold blood. But you can't, like, hug someone in cold blood. No, you would just say, she hugged him without any emotion or feeling in a robotic way, right? That's not in cold blood because there's no cruel intent there and there's no cause of violence. All right. The next one is over the top. That's a little over the top. We're talking about the same man that killed all these people in cold blood. And in the prison, because the system there in whatever country it was is very lenient. They have a very, you'd call it a very compassionate prison system. Dan was saying that the man was complaining about not having, you know, the latest video game version of PlayStation. And I respond by saying, wow, that's a little over the top. I don't know how I would feel about that if one of my loved ones was murdered by him. And this guy's complaining about not having a PlayStation. Shouldn't he be, you know, reforming himself? Shouldn't he be doing meditation, meeting with counselors? Shouldn't he be doing some kind of work that helps to contribute to society or building value to give to society? That would be a good use of his time, not playing PlayStation. So I'm saying that maybe that prison system is a good one, but things like that are over the top. So what that means is just it's beyond what is normally expected. It's extreme. And sometimes to the point of no longer being acceptable. Let me give you another example. Let's imagine that you're at work and one of your coworkers, who you don't know very well, you know him a little bit, he says to you, hey, listen, I forgot my lunch money. I mean, I forgot my wallet at home and I don't have money for lunch. Can you lend me some money? And you say, sure, and you give him $20. And you run into him a couple of days later and he returns the money to you and he says, hey, I really appreciate this. Thank you. Okay, great. That's exactly what you would expect. He thanks you. He returns the money. Now let's imagine, same situation. You see him 2 days later, and not only does he return the money and thank you, but he gives you a bar of chocolate. And he says, look, I really appreciate what you've done for me by lending me that money. And, you know, on my way out of the cafe where I was eating lunch, they were selling these chocolate bars, so I decided to buy one for you. And then, I didn't expect that, but wow, you didn't have to do that. That's really nice of you, but thank you. I love chocolate. Okay, so that's beyond what is expected, but it's not over the top. What would be over the top? Okay, here's an example. Same situation. You see the guy. He comes back to you. He gives you the money. He's so thankful that he gives you a hug. He starts crying. And he gives you a bottle of champagne, and he goes on and on explaining how thankful he is. Whoa, now I'm starting to feel a little uncomfortable with this. Why are you doing this? This is way beyond what he should be doing, which is simply thanking me and returning the money. That's over the top. Whoa, this is over the top, right? That's an example of how you would use that phrase, over the top. Okay, we're moving on here. Pales in comparison. We're talking about people who have turned over a new leaf in their life. And Dan asked me, do you know someone who's, you know, went through a dramatic transformation in their life? And I say, yeah, I do, but it pales in comparison to what Sean and Tara did with their lives. The change of the people that I know pales in comparison to these amazing people and the changes they went through. So what does that mean? Well, let's take a look at the word pale. As an adjective, it just means light or soft or muted when we're talking about color or kind of a lack of color. People look pale in the face when they're sick or if they're shocked at something or if they're just not feeling well. If they're feeling queasy or sick to their stomach, their face loses color. We say they have a pale face. Or they look pale. But pale can also mean kind of inferior or of lesser quality. You know, like a pale attempt at helping someone. A pale attempt at thanking someone. A pale version of the original. These are ways we might use that. But to pale as a verb means to become less important or to seem. I think that's important, to seem less valuable or less important. For example, Japan is cold in the winter. It's a four-season country. It's cold in the winter. But the level of coldness pales in comparison to how cold it is in Siberia, right? It just pales in comparison. It's not even close to how cold it is in Siberia, in Russia. Cooking. I like cooking. I love cooking. I don't have much time to cook these days, but I love cooking, and I feel like some of the dishes I make are really delicious and attractive looking, but my level of skill and ability in cooking pales in comparison to professional chefs who have trained for many years and can, I mean, their ability to cook is way beyond mine. It's not even close to comparing. So my abilities pale in comparison to professional chefs. Okay, a few more here. The next is out him. Dan's saying, I know this guy that I went to college with, and he was a real jerk, but I won't out him by name. What does that mean, to out someone? Well, to out someone simply means to reveal information about them without their permission or even against their will. And it's usually like secret information or private information that they might not necessarily want you to share with other people, and you do it anyway. You're outing them. You're revealing their name. You're revealing something secret about them. And that could cause them embarrassment when you out someone. It has social consequences. So to out someone, you want to be careful about that. So Dan doesn't want to name this guy in case someone who's listening happens to know him. And then that could cause him embarrassment. It can make him angry. So we wouldn't want to do that. He doesn't want to out him. So sometimes, yeah, you have to be careful, especially using social media, that you don't out someone inadvertently. Sometimes we do it without realizing that we're doing it. So we have to be aware when communicating, especially this day and age, the digital age, to be careful not to out people we know or people we care about or even people we don't know. It's just out of common human courtesy not to out other people. Respect their privacy. Okay, the last one is suss out. Okay, suss out. This is a phrasal verb. What does that mean, to suss out something? Dan is saying, when I arrived as a student, this guy had been in Japan for a month and he'd already sussed out all of this used loot, meaning used things that are valuable that you could pick up off the streets, like television sets, furniture, etc. And that's true. Actually, back, you know, 30 years ago, in the time of the bubble, and even in the 90s, Japanese people would throw out perfectly good furniture, perfectly good electronics. There were nothing wrong with them. They were just a few years old, and they wanted something new. So you could go down to the local garbage dumping area, and it's like going shopping with, and everything's free. So I actually furnished my first room in Japan that way in the late 90s. And then that never happens today. I mean, nowadays in Japan, you could go to like used shops that sell used goods, but you'll never find stuff like that on the street anymore. Things have changed. So anyway, what does suss out mean? Suss out means to investigate, to research, to come to understand something. It takes effort to do it, and you end up having some kind of knowledge that others don't easily have, and it helps you in some way. It's kind of like having special knowledge of something. So this guy comes to Japan, and there's no book that, you know, or website that shows you where all the garbage dumping places are. He has to go find them. He has to look around. He has to ask around. And eventually, in doing that, he is sussing out where the best places are to get garbage that is, you know, very useful to him. So he's sussed out all the areas, and he has that knowledge, and he can teach it, if he wants to newcomers, to people who come in new. So that brings us to the end of this lesson. I hope you found it useful. And if you have any questions, please do ask us. You can post them in the forum or email us directly. Okay, take care.